So hello and welcome back to the podcasts of the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. My name is Guy Melrose and today I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Eva Gregory. Eva currently works in sexual health in Auckland and is a board member for a relatively new organisation called Pride in Health. So welcome to the podcast, Eva. Thank you so much for joining us.
Kia ora.
We'll get into more detail as we go through our chat, but I think the best place to start is actually with you. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself and your background and how you, what you're doing in medicine at this point?
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you. As you said, my name's Eva Gregory, and I am a medical doctor working in Auckland in sexual health. I identify as queer and non-binary, and my pronouns are they, them, and she, her. In terms of medical background, I trained in Auckland and then worked for a few years in sexual health and family planning in Wellington, and more recently did my GP training in Auckland and worked in the Centre for Youth Health doing adolescent gender-affirming care in 2020. This year, I am both a GP registrar trying to finish that off and a senior registrar at the Auckland Sexual Health Service. And I'm one of the board members of Pride in Health, which is a charitable trust formed by a group of doctors to try and increase education about rainbow concerns for people in medicine. I'm also on the education committee of PATHA, which is the Professional Association for Transgender Health Aotearoa, and I work full time. Quite busy.
And you mentioned Pride in Health there. That was the conduit by which we got in touch. And I was excited to hear about this organisation that was hopefully going to make educational resources easier to come by and kind of quality check them for those of us working out there in the urgent care world who need to get access to quality and reliable information. So that leads into my first question to you, which is quite a general one, but why is rainbow care important?
Rainbow care is important because people under the rainbow spectrum have the same health needs as everyone else, but generally find it harder to access healthcare because often doctors or medical professionals don't quite understand the health needs of rainbow people, or they get intimidated by language around caring for rainbow people, and that impacts our care. In surveys that have been done over the last couple of years of trans and gender diverse people accessing healthcare, it was found that over a third of people who answered the Counting Ourselves survey avoided seeing doctors when they needed medical care because they were worried about being badly treated.
So is there actually a definition of rainbow health that we can refer to?
So the definition of rainbow health is very broad, and people that come under the rainbow umbrella would be anyone that isn't cisgendered or heterosexual, basically. So the other language that is used is the LGBTQIA+, which refers to people of different genders and sexualities like lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex as well. Rainbow as a term encompasses a huge community of people who are often broken into quite different sub-communities with very different healthcare needs.
And I was drawn by something you said earlier about people having a fear or an experience of being mistreated. When you say mistreated, are we talking about clinically mistreated? Are we talking about the way in which the interaction in the consultation goes, or is it a mixture of both of those sorts of interactions?
So in this particular survey, which was Counting Ourselves, which was conducted in 2018 by a team based out of the University of Waikato. This was specifically a survey aimed at trans and non-binary people, so not people who are cisgendered at all. And the language that was used was that people were afraid of being mistreated, and that can include being misgendered or having the wrong language used around them, but also that a smaller number had reported that they had experienced health professionals trying to stop them from being trans or non-binary. So there is a big fear in rainbow communities of healthcare professionals in general that we might call people by the wrong name, identify them as the wrong person, and even go so far as to kind of withhold medical treatment from them that they feel like they need.
And I think this is one of the reasons that I wanted to speak to somebody from Pride in Health, because urgent care as defined is non-appointment based unscheduled care. So for people who become acutely ill or injured who need care that isn't at the level of an emergency department, so it isn't life and limb threatening, but it is still urgent, which is needs to be seen within 24 hours, causes distress, causes pain. None of us want to be having to go to an urgent care clinic. And there are barriers for that could be in place, from what you're saying there, that members of the rainbow community might not come to see an urgent care clinic because of some of the things that you've talked about. So I'm keen, and our community should be keen, to make urgent care clinics as accessible and welcoming and safe for the rainbow community. And I think when we were chatting before offline, we talked about how it starts at the very beginning and how you set the tone is how you introduce yourself, and how that first interaction goes can set the tone for the rest of the consultation. So introducing yourself and that introductory phase when dealing with particularly a transgender person, what do we need? How do we approach that? What do we need to know? And what can you tell us about that starting point?
So I think you just keep it really simple. And the simple steps are just don't assume anything and ask open questions. So when you're meeting someone for the first time in a clinical setting, as part of our practice anyway, it's a good idea to check name and birth date and things like that. And you can do that in an open way that lets them answer the question in a positive way. So, and you can start by, you can use yourself as an example. So for instance, I could introduce myself as, "Hi, I'm Eva, I'm the doctor that you're seeing today, and my pronouns are they and she." And then you could just pause, or then you could ask them what their name or pronouns are. And even by doing that, you've opened up the door in the understanding that you are asking them and that you have some understanding of the use of pronouns. So you have some understanding that their pronouns may be varied and that you're going to respect their name and pronouns because you're asking them.
And if we were to talk about pronoun use at this point, that's obviously what you've just said to me now, a very important reason for why they're important. It's a signal to the other person that you are going to respect that part of their of themselves. So it's a an immediate starting point to the rest of the consultation. Are there other reasons why correct pronoun use is important? I think you touched on it a little bit earlier when you mentioned the mistreatment can start with mispronouncing and misgendering people. So can you talk a little bit more about why it's important to use pronouns correctly?
Yes, just because that's the person's identity. So if you were seeing a patient and you said their name and they said, "Oh, actually, that's not my name," or "You've said it wrong," or "I use this now, I use my middle name instead," it would be rude of you to continue using the name that they'd asked you not to use. And pronouns are exactly the same. So it helps establish a relationship with the person, and also it's just sort of common politeness.
I like that analogy of the wrong name, because that's something that I will do totally unintentionally when I pick up a board or a card, that sometimes the names are written back to front, but sometimes the printer, it comes around the other side, so the last name's first and vice versa, and I misread the name when I'm calling somebody, and it's it is, you feel bad obviously and you apologize. So if you were to misuse somebody's pronoun, get the pronoun wrong, or even misgender them, I guess is the other but accidentally, how do you approach that kind of little hiccup at the start of the consultation? What would be your suggestion of what to do at that point?
You approach it exactly as you've just said. If you got someone's name wrong, you feel a little bit bad, but not terrible. You apologize, ask them what the correct term is, and then you use it, and then you move on. And it's usually just water under the bridge at that point. What you don't want to do is make a massive deal about it. You don't want to sort of fall over yourself apologizing, because that just makes people feel awkward. It's just, you just ask, apologize if you're wrong, correct, and then move on.
And in terms of things like patient management systems like MedTech and the various ones out there, in your experience, do they enable this sort of information to be clearly documented, such that triage or the reception, that this sort of information can be disseminated, so that people aren't having to maybe make mistakes multiple times, that it's documented properly? Have you found that with patient management systems in your experience?
I think it varies hugely between patient management systems. The easiest way to approach it, I think, is by having if you have paper registration forms for new patients, which I guess you do, having a field on the paper registration form where they can fill in the name that they want to be used by the doctor, and a birth name if you need to look up the NHI in a separate field. And then when you're asking for gender, just even if you just leave an open box for them to fill it in themselves, so that if they're not cisgendered, they can just write what they are. And if you have a box for pronouns, and then most patient management systems will have some place that you can record a preferred name or a name for the doctor to use. And that seems to mostly be fine.
So there's ways to make sure that this information is recorded. And I think it's possibly that people don't think about it, and therefore it doesn't happen. You have to think and look for these issues within the way clinics are set up or the way that processes are set up. But you have to be thinking in order to in order to make these sorts of changes. And I think, just going back again to that phrase you used, mistreated, the correct pronoun use is one way that we can make sure that we're not mistreating our patients. How else can we, particularly at the top, at that introduction of the consultation, how else can we make sure that we're not starting down a track where we're mistreating people?
I think, again, you just keep it simple and ask for the name and pronouns. And then when you have an idea of what they're coming to present to you for, focusing on that presentation rather than the characteristics that put them under the rainbow umbrella, if they're not relevant to why they're seeing you. Because most of the time that you see someone who is LGBT+, you won't be seeing them for anything related to their gender or their sexuality. And there's a joke in the kind of rainbow community that you go to see a doctor about your broken leg, and then they ask you what your sexuality is, or if you're on contraception, or Are you taking hormones or not taking hormones? And in some ways, some of it's relevant, but also if you're there for a broken leg, you don't need to focus on their gender or sexuality all of the time. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned the broken leg as an example, because in urgent care, being unplanned care, we will often have to jump ahead of a consultation structure that we might have learnt at medical school and the ideal, and jump to the more pressing concern, which might be the ankle that's obviously broken and has a pulseless cold foot. And so there's this kind of sometimes a need to jump into the more acute thing, or the patient might be in so much pain that actually they're not, you have to address the pain before they can really answer questions in more depth. So my question is looping around to that. We've talked before about how starting the consultation with that introduction at the start is important, but if you've had to jump in the other way, you it's important, I guess, to make sure you go back round and then start with those questions and setting the tone a little bit later. But it's important not to forget that. And then, as you say, when the leg is the more pressing thing, you move on, because it's no longer it's no longer relevant, but you've established that rapport.
Focus on the broken leg.
But it's important.
You don't need to go into how long have you known you're trans, you know, kind of thing, when the leg's bleeding out. Yeah. On the other hand, sometimes it might be relevant. So anyone, including cis women who are on oral estrogen, are at higher risk of blood clots than the general population. And so maybe for a broken leg that has to go into a cast and become non-weight bearing, that is really important information for you to know. And again, then framing those questions with why you want to know them, I think it helps establish a good rapport with the person. So instead of kind of jumping into like, are you taking estrogen, you can ask, you know, I just want to get an idea of what medications you're on, because they might affect your risk of blood clots in the future from this injury. Are you taking estrogen at the moment, and are you taking it orally or patches or things like that? I think providing the information around why you're asking questions is always really important, especially in an urgent care setting where you haven't met this person before.
Yeah, so I guess what I'm getting from you, which is fantastic, is that it's important to start and build that rapport, because that leads on to the rest of the consultation and enables safe healthcare to be provided, because of you're building that trust and that bond. But it's also important not to dwell on what is not relevant to the urgent presentation that day. Although we have to, but the same with any other presentation from any other person, think of the relevance of interactions of medications, etc. But so it's really all we're talking about, really, as we go through this conversation, is it's about doing the same for everybody, the same history, taking the same treatment, is the same for everybody.
Absolutely.
And we're just having to open our, in some cases, I would imagine, opening our minds and opening our knowledge base to recognize that there is this portion of the community that we must not ignore. And
I think also to recognize that while you, the doctor, might be coming into this consultation fresh with no assumptions and no ill will or anything, that the person that you're walking into the room to see could potentially be carrying a lot of baggage of bad medical interactions from the past. They could have had interactions with doctors who had kind of interrogated them on their sexuality or their gender, or asked invasive and irrelevant questions about their sex partners and that kind of thing. And I think doctors just need to have an understanding that there is mistreatment of gay and gender diverse people by the medical establishment in the past. And while we don't have to, as in doctors don't have to feel responsible for all of that, understand that rainbow patients sometimes are coming into the room carrying that and with that fear, and that it's our job to alleviate that, to make a space that's safe for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Totally, totally. And it's important to be said, because I think it can be brushed over in conversation, and it can be, it's too easy to ignore the, like you say, that the prior...
historical mistreatment. Yes. Yeah. Like, we have to be honest, historical mistreatment by the medical community to the rainbow community in various different ways. And I think that that's where that statistic of people, you know, over a third of people who are trans or non-binary avoiding seeing doctors because they're scared of being mistreated. It's not actually really that they're scared of being called the wrong name. It's that there is this weight of historical mistreatement that they are aware of, that we as doctors maybe aren't, because we haven't been on the receiving end. And again, I don't want to make people scared of seeing rainbow patients at all, but I think that we just need to be sensitive to those fears in the community, and that it's our job to make it a safe space to overcome them, not the patient's job to make us feel okay about what we're doing medically.
And it would seem from what you're saying that introduction can be the opening of that, the beginning of that trust between you and your patient,
because
Absolutely. It's setting the tone. And so it's a simple thing to do, and then everything after that is exactly as you would normally treat a patient of any
exactly.
patient, any age, gender, and any race. Everybody
exactly.
is the same. And so it really does come back to that introduction, that first meeting, and the tone setting. And it doesn't require any specific skills.
It
doesn't require
and
anything.
You don't have to be the expert on their gender or their sexuality. They can be the expert on that. You don't need to know everything about them or anything like that. You just need to be open to asking the questions and respecting the answers that you're given. And that goes a huge way to create a good relationship with the medical community. And even more than just the relationship that you as one doctor is establishing with this one patient, the flow-on effects are huge. Like, if you have a positive interaction with this person, next time they need medical treatment for something totally unrelated to their gender or sexuality, they're going to feel more comfortable seeing the next doctor because they've had a positive experience now.
And I'm pleased you mentioned this, because it leads me into my next question, is that not being an expert in something is kind of part of what urgent care is. We
yeah.
have to know a lot about a lot of things, and there are certain areas which we are more expert in. And I think the specialty of urgent care is a discussion I'm happy to have in at great length. But we're not, as I say to people, we're not cardiologists, but we have to know a lot about cardiac conditions and etc.
Yes.
So we're not going to be experts in sexual health like you are training towards. We're not going to be able to be fully knowledgeable about gender affirming care, but we have got to have an understanding, and that starts with the respect that and the building a rapport with the patient is obviously the first thing, and the bare minimum that we should do. After which we can then tap out, and I've said it when we were chatting on the phone last week, that I, due to COVID reasons, met a patient who'd been stranded in New Zealand last year on medications that I had absolutely no clue about, and this person needed a prescription. And I just had to say, I have no clue, and then I was able to find somebody via a sexual health clinic who could answer my questions and guide me through things, and that was fantastic. And one of the reasons for talking with Pride in Health is to hear about your plans going forward for resources that we can hopefully use as an urgent care team to better to find answers to the questions that we don't know about. So is that the part of the aim of Pride and Health in terms of education?
Yes, absolutely. Definitely. So, yeah, so like I said at the start, we're a charitable trust that was formed by six medical doctors, the majority of us being members of the Rainbow community in some form or another. And the idea that we had when we formed was that we wanted to get out good educational resources for doctors about medical care for Rainbow people and of conditions relating to gender and sexuality, I suppose, because there is a lot of information available out there on the internet mostly, but weeding out the good stuff from the bad and the relevant from the irrelevant is a huge job. So we are very lucky in that we've been given a grant by MAS, and at present we're working on our website and writing the content for that. And like I said, that's aimed at medical professionals to have a good ground-based knowledge of Rainbow healthcare, basically. We're also hoping to provide a good space for medical professionals who are Rainbow themselves to be able to have discussions and kind of peer support within our organisation. But our first focus is on the website and creating that content. So watch this space. We're writing it literally right now.
That's fantastic. And I think we certainly hope to speak to yourself and other members of your team on various topics relating to this going forwards. And so one area I'm interested in discussing is ways in which we can make urgent care clinics a safer environment. The little things sometimes that can help. We've talked about the use of pronouns and getting the correct introduction at the top of a consultation, but are there other ways that we can do that? And I think that's something we should talk about. One thing I just want to maybe just reflect back onto here was, initially I was coming at this with a question of, is there anything relating to LGBTQ plus health that might present to an urgent care clinic that we need to know about? And I think from talking with you, it seems that it isn't, it's a case of getting that first introduction right, getting the trust, getting the rapport, getting the relationship, and then everything else leads on as any other consultation would. And so really there probably isn't a huge amount clinically and that we would need to know about. And if we found ourselves in a situation where there might be something, and particularly around gender-affirming care that might present after hours or over Christmas, we can call the sexual health teams at the hospital for advice is probably the best place to get that answer. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we're here for. There aren't many conditions that I can think of that relate only to Rainbow healthcare. Certain parts of the Rainbow umbrella confer or are associated with higher risks of certain things, but everything is just basic medicine, I reckon. Getting the on a personal basis, like on a what can you do as one doctor, I think the most important things would be to have a basic understanding of some of the language. So we could have done this at the start, but I can have a quick go of it now. So Rainbow refers to people of all diverse genders and sexualities. So basically anyone that's not cisgendered and heterosexual. Cisgender refers to someone whose gender matches the sex that they were assigned at birth. And transgender refers to someone whose gender does not match their sex assigned at birth. And then the language that people use to describe their gender and sexuality, the best way to know what language to use is to ask the person, because different people will find different terms better and worse. And also that people's sexuality, as in who they're attracted to and who they have sex with, is completely separate from their gender. As in if they're a man or a woman or a transgender man or transgender woman. So that makes the Rainbow umbrella quite confusing and a difficult term to use because it encompasses a whole bunch of very different people with very different health needs. Other things that people can do on a kind of personal level or maybe clinic-based level is to look at the language that they use and to try and use gender-inclusive language. So the idea of gender-inclusive language is that you are describing whatever is relevant to what you're talking about without using exclusive language. And I guess as an example of that, when I talk about people who have periods, I talk about people with periods. I don't talk about women because not all women have periods. And some men do have periods, some transgender men have periods, and also some cisgender women, so women that were born as women and identify as women, also don't have periods either because they are pregnant or postmenopausal, or they have a genetic condition which means that they don't menstruate. So I would just challenge people to have a look at the gender that they put into their clinical language and ask themselves, is it necessary and does it describe what we're talking about? Other things that people could do on a clinic level would be to look at the signage in their clinics. Most people have a toilet at home that people of any gender will use, and many clinics also have toilets that people of any gender will use. And so having gender-inclusive signage might just be as simple as having a sign on the toilet that has a picture of a toilet and says restroom, rather than a sign that has a man and a woman type figure that talks about, you know, anyone of any gender can use this restroom, when you could just remove gender from that whole equation. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I guess my question here relates to the fact that there is a lot of information out there. And I think this is an area that has certainly in the last few years changed. There's been a lot more about, and rightly so, about pronoun use and using correct gender, and it's been something that obviously maybe 20 years ago was not as much in the news, but it's obviously important that it's making its way to the surface and being recognised now. And I think one of the issues that some doctors will have is that there is so much information, and how do you find it? How do you get the best stuff? And that's why I think what you're describing about Pride and Health is going to be so important, is that you'll be curating information that we can trust and is relevant to medical practitioners and isn't just something you've found off Google, which, as we all know, Google can throw up all kinds of nonsense. So I'm hopeful that, and we will mention this on our website, on the podcast again, and via Facebook, etc. When your website is up and running, we can certainly make sure that it goes out in our newsletter and everything, so people can start to bookmark it and use it as a resource that they can trust, because it can be confusing for people. And I want people to get the right information, the best information, so that they can make this the continuing education continue for them, to make us, most importantly, the thing that is still sitting with me is when you tell me about people who feel fear of coming to a medical clinic for fear of being mistreated, and that as somebody who
tell you stories, and maybe the generic story, which is not based in a person, that would be someone that is likely to present to an urgent care clinic, is that, for example, transgender people, especially if they've only just started hormones or they haven't started hormones yet or whatever, often feel uncomfortable about using public bathrooms because they're worried that someone is going to confront them, because sometimes people do confront transgender people in public bathrooms. So sometimes transgender people will not urinate, like not pee for the whole day and just hold on because there seems like there's no safe place for them to go. And so then they get raging UTIs. So they'll get a mild UTI, not want to go to their doctor because they're scared of being treated funny or being asked invasive questions, and then get bad UTIs and end up getting pyelo from it. And like, this is a real thing that happens, like as a very clear outcome of being treated not well by members of the public and not being made to feel like you can use a public bathroom. Like, I know people that this has happened to, and it's terrible. I mean, no one should get pyelo because they can't use the bathroom.
And yeah, that it does. It kind of makes me a mix of angry and sad and frustrated to think that there are people who are not going to come and see me in a clinic because of a fear of that, and therefore we've got to, as a medical community, make sure we've done our utmost to make sure that this doesn't happen, that we're as open and welcoming to everybody, and as I say, urgent care is an open door in a lot of cases, 24/7, to everybody, and we've got to give that same care. And I think that's where I'd sort of wrap things up for our chat today, because I think the journey I've been on talking to you has been to make me realise that if we get it right at the start, the rest is just normal medicine.
And
it's not anything clever. It's not anything complicated. It's not anything difficult. It's just at the start, get an introduction such that you create a rapport and such that you're trusted. And then we get on with making people better. And
if you make a mistake, it's fine. Just apologize, move on, use the correct language, and you'll be forgiven. Don't make assumptions about people, and don't get distracted or bogged down by the fact that they are of a diverse gender or sexuality, and pull your focus away from why they're there, which might be their broken leg, and then you'll be fine.
Yep. And that goes for a lot of things. Don't assume. It can be applied to everything, but in this particular case,
absolutely.
Yeah, do not assume.
It's really important. Yeah. And also that if you do it, and like I also have stories of if you as the doctor do it right, you make it better for that person next time they go and see a doctor, and you make it better for all of their queer friends that they say, I went to see this doctor and it was fine. Like, you can make a huge difference as the doctor.
Absolutely. And we see that a lot in children. If you mistreat a broken arm in a child in the way that you approach them and hurt them, then they come back to the fracture clinic and they refuse to have the cast off, and they run out of the room, and then you think, for the rest of their childhood they're going to fear doctors, and so we see this in other areas, and we should open our eyes to see this in this important part of the community out there. And thank you, Eva, for explaining to us at this
absolute
sort of introduction.
Pleasure.
I'm keen to chat
to
you again in the future.
It really was just an introduction.
Exactly.
There's so much more. Yeah.
So I'd love to chat to you again in the future, and to your colleagues we've mentioned. And as I say, we will put out when your website's ready. But for the time being, there is a Facebook page and a Twitter page that people can follow, where you are sharing important information in the interim. And then obviously people, if you follow either of those, will also know when the website goes up, but we'll make sure we get it out there. And
we're aiming early next year, Q1 2022,
which is next month.
We're
in December now. I can't believe it.
Where's
this year gone? So thank you, Eva, and I look forward to chatting to you again.
Thanks so much, Guy.
My thanks to Eva for talking to the podcast. Ensuring that we create an environment that is open and welcoming to all our potential patients is vital. As with so much in urgent care, we cannot be expected to know more about a topic than experts in their field. What sets our specialty, and that of ED and GP, apart from others, is our need for general knowledge across all areas of medicine. But we cannot know everything. So firstly, it's important to know when to ask for help when we get out of our depth. But we also need to identify gaps in our knowledge and look to fill those gaps through suitable CPD activities. This way, we grow and continue to grow professionally. As with most things in life, if you're unsure or do not understand something, the best way to learn is to ask questions and then listen to the answers. I expect that for many of us, medical school did not cover much by way of rainbow health and pronoun usage, and so we might feel lost when navigating some of these issues. I also expect that many of us are fearful of making mistakes. Eva is happy to answer any questions our urgent care community might have around this topic. So if any of you have something on your mind that you would like answering by Eva, email us at podcast@rnzcuc.org.nz and I will put the questions to them in a future podcast. We will keep any questions asked anonymous, so do not worry if you have a question you think you should already know the answer. Now we'll be back again next week with another podcast. I look forward to seeing you all then, but for now, thanks for listening.